In Paris, on the evening of 29th of May, 1832, a young French mathematician, 20-year-old Évariste Galois, wrote a letter he knew would be the last of his life. It was written to a close friend and was full of mathematical ideas and results. The letter ends as follows. Please request publicly that Jacobi or Gauss, these were two of the greatest mathematicians of the day, give their opinions not on the truth but on the importance of these theorems. After that, I hope people will profit by sorting out all this mess. I embrace you with affection. Neither Jacobi nor Gauss ever saw Galois' letter, so far as we know, but the next morning, at daybreak, Galois lay by the side of the road, fatally shot in the abdomen. A passer-by took him to hospital. His brother Alfred rushed to his bedside, and Évariste's last words to Alfred were, "Don't cry. I need all my courage to die at 20. The following day, his death was in all the major newspapers. Here's an extract from a newspaper in Lyon. "A deplorable duel yesterday robbed science of a young man who inspired the brightest hopes, but whose prodigious fame is only of a political nature. Young Évariste Galois fought a duel with an old friend, a very young man like him, and like him a member of the Society of Friends of the People. At point-blank range, each of them was given a pistol and fired. Only one of the pistols was loaded." Galois' prodigious fame was as a Republican revolutionary. He'd been imprisoned and then released a month earlier. But as an infamous revolutionary, his fame was transient, while his real claim to immortality was the revolutionary nature of his mathematics. Now, more than 170 years later, serious students of mathematics are taught about Galois theory, Galois groups, Galois fields, and so on. How could such a young man have such a lasting influence on mathematics? And did the political circumstances of the time help or hinder his work? Galois' major results concerned algebraic equations, and his work stood at the pinnacle of a long line of historical development, starting with the Babylonians. They solved equations of degree 2, those whose highest power of x is x squared. In school we call them quadratic equations, quadratic meaning squaring. The next step was equations of degree 3, those whose highest power of x is x cubed, but these weren't solved for another 3,000 years. Then, in about 1100 AD, Omar Khayyam, the celebrated Persian poet, even better known at the time for his mathematics and astronomy, developed a geometric method for solving them. He regretted not having a numerical formula and hoped that later mathematicians would find one. They did, but it took another 400 years. Then in the early 1500s, four Italian mathematicians managed to solve not just equations of degree 3, but those of degree 4, whose highest power of x is x to the 4. After that, however, the development stopped. And although mathematics moved forward by leaps and bounds, no one could find a formula for solving equations of degree 5. In fact, the experts began to wonder whether such a formula wasn't impossible and contradictory. Eventually, in 1824, a young Norwegian mathematician named Niels Henrik Abel proved there could be no general formula, in terms of square roots, cube roots, and so on, for solving equations of degree 5 or greater. This was fine in one way. I mean, if there was no formula, there was no point in looking for one. But it left an important question unanswered, because you could solve some of these equations in terms of square roots, cube roots, and so on, and not solve others. The question was how to distinguish the two. This is where Galois comes in. He looked at patterns among the solutions of a single equation and studied the symmetry of these patterns. The more symmetry there was, the more complicated the solutions would be. Too much symmetry was a bad thing as far as formulas go. Part of the reason Galois succeeded was that he was so young and impatient, he refused to get bogged down in calculations, and, as he wrote himself, "Since Euler, calculations have become more and more necessary, but more and more difficult." I should explain here that Euler was the most prolific mathematician of all time, a man who calculated effortlessly and could write a whole paper between the first and second calls to dinner. And Galois goes on to say, "One can therefore conclude with certainty that it has become more and more necessary to embrace several operations at once, because the mind can no longer stop to look at details. Jump on calculations."